and welcome back to episode 3 of the Punks in Suits podcast. Absolutely loving doing these podcasts, loving the feedback that I'm getting from you on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. My name's Blair Palmer and I work with senior teams and leaders, helping them figure out how to lead in these fast-changing times. And that's also the purpose of this podcast, to share with you some of the experiences that I've had, what's going on for me and some of the things that I'm learning as I work with leaders, and give you a bit of time to think and reflect on what kind of leader you want to be. You know, we're all so busy, aren't we, that the opportunity to think, whether you're doing that in the car or the train or the plane on your way to some meeting somewhere, or whether you are one of the very lucky few who manages to carve out a bit of time during the day to just sit back and think and maybe be sparked or inspired by podcasts, by books, by magazine articles. It's great to have you here and it's great that you're taking this opportunity. Leadership is so much about what goes on in the mind. People think when they go on a leadership course that they're going to learn tools and techniques and models and tricks to get people to follow them, and that's not really my style. For me, leadership is all about the inner world. It's about getting your ego out of the way. It's about really connecting with people, forming these authentic human connections with people. It's about bringing as much of yourself into a situation as possible. And for far too long, all the leadership work has been about trying to be something other than yourself, trying to be a superhuman. And I think that we're all starting to see that that's not working. It's exhausting and it causes a huge amount of stress. And I see it in the organizations that I go in, the bags under the eyes and the travel schedule and the long hours and the time away from family, the time away from doing all the other things that life is for. So that's really what we're here for. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. But first, let me ask you this question. How did you get on last week with letting the mask drop? Did you reveal a bit more about yourself? Let yourself be less polished, less all-knowing, less perfect? I know it's not easy. It can actually feel like you're doing yourself a disservice, like you could be doing this better. It's almost like you're trying to be rubbish, but you're not. You're showing your humanity. And increasingly, that's what we want and need from our leaders. Last time I talked about why that was important for you, how being on all the time takes a huge toll. It's absolutely exhausting keeping up that mask all the time. But there's another reason to do this that I didn't talk very much about, and that's to do with trust. Every year, a survey called the Edelman Trust Barometer comes out in January. I wait with bated breath for it. I absolutely love it. I find it fascinating. And it's a survey, global survey of levels of trust around the world. Now, I will come back to trust many, many times, I'm sure, in future. And I'll particularly talk about the Edelman Trust Barometer at the beginning of next year and talk you through some of the data. But it's worth knowing that in the latest survey, whilst surprisingly to me, certainly, levels of trust globally are rising, they're at a post-recession high as of 2016, who we trust and what we trust is shifting. For instance, the board is an institution that isn't hugely trusted. Funnily enough, the board is less trusted than the CEO. And a person like yourself or another employee is more trusted than the CEO. In addition to that, people feel that the CEO should be much more visible when it comes to having an interest in society. And they're less interested, it's important, but they're less interested in the CEO only talking about financial results. There's also a really big gap between what people say builds trust and what they actually experience. So for instance, leaders having integrity is far more important than being able to demonstrate financial performance. Financial performance is still really important, but integrity is even more important. Yet whilst people say that integrity, which is being open and transparent, being ethical, taking responsibility when there's a crisis or when there's been an accident, is really important. Scores for performance levels in that area are not very good. So people need their leaders to act with integrity, but they don't experience them as acting with integrity. Now, very few people are going to say, oh, I don't act in integrity. We always think that what we're doing is for the best. We're balancing difficult tensions. We're often choosing as leaders between a rock and a hard place. But we are limited in our integrity by what we believe is possible. Our biases, our beliefs, our assumptions all get in the way of the decisions that we believe we can influence. And we make sweeping generalizations that things are this way, that these are the facts of life, but what if they aren't? So when it comes to letting the mask drop, this ability to build trust through authentic human connections is one big motivator for you. But if building trust is important to you, it's time to have a look at the assumptions, the beliefs, and the biases that you bring to everyday situations. And that's our topic for today. How you see the world, what you believe, your mindset, and your experiences all form your perspective. They form the way that you see the world. And you're so used to seeing the world through that lens that you don't even recognize that it's just that. It's a lens. It's not a fact. It's just a belief that this is the way that things are. Not only that, but your perceptions tend to be reinforced by your experiences rather than challenged by your experiences. So if I give you an example, if you are someone who believes that people need close supervision, then you will closely supervise them. As a result, they won't think or learn for themselves because they have no opportunity to do so. And therefore, you'll continue to find mistakes and poor reasoning in their work, proving to you that you were right. People need close supervision. If you imagine that same person in a coaching workshop, where coaching assumes that the person being coached has wisdom inside them and many of the answers already inside them, that person on the coaching workshop might very well learn some tools and techniques, some clever questions to ask, how to pull a face that makes it look like they're listening. But fundamentally, they will never believe in coaching, because they believe that people are basically quite stupid and need close supervision. But if during the training that person realizes that they carry that belief and can see all the ways that it's causing short-term comfort, being the one who has all the answers, knowing that mistakes aren't going to slip through the net because, you know, you're checking all the time, but long-term pain, like no time to think big, there's no successor being developed, so you can't move on. There's huge pressure to have all the answers because you're surrounded by idiots who don't have any of the answers. You're paying for people who don't pull their weight, which is hugely frustrating. They're frustrated. You're getting poor engagement figures. You're getting feedback every year from your own manager that you're not perceived as a leader because you don't coach your people. You don't bring out the best in them. And this is inhibiting your career progression. If you understood that long-term pain and that it was all due to this belief that you held, you might be willing to believe something else. That it's the way you think about leadership and yourself as a leader, which is the problem, rather than your people being the problem. And that it's there where you really need to pay attention, looking inwards at your own beliefs and assumptions rather than blaming the capabilities of the people around you. Coaching then becomes not something you're going to do to people, but something that actually reflects your newfound realization about your own role as a leader. So then the curious questions come to you more easily. Your team see your authenticity when you ask the coaching questions, and they sense your commitment to their growth rather than your frustration that they aren't getting the right answers. And that's how change happens. The transition from lowercase punk to uppercase punk has occurred. There are so many of these beliefs hardwired in business. I'll just give you a few examples that I've seen in most of the companies that I work with. Firstly, that it's hard to motivate people. that people come to work lackluster and lacking in energy and lacking in motivation, and that you have to do something extra special to get them motivated and keep them motivated. That people can't be trusted. They can't be trusted to even help themselves to pens from the stationery cupboard, let alone help themselves to tools that are kept in the workshop or to company cars that are parked in the parking lot. And that's why we have so much paperwork, because basically people can't be trusted. Another belief is that people don't care as much about things as I do. And I hear this one a lot. I'll be working with someone or with a team of people, and they will believe that they're the only ones in the business that care, and that everyone else must be motivated by something else. There's a belief that most people are just in it for the money, unlike the individual who carries that belief. So that individual thinks, no, I'm here for the greater good. I'm here. I'm motivated by helping people. I'm motivated by doing what's best for the customer. But most people here, they just care about the money, which is why we end up with bonus schemes and why we end up tempting people to stay at the company by raising their salary or trying to attract the best talent by offering a really good package. A few more. There's a belief that how we compare with our competition matters. Most companies are in a battle to be number one in their market, or certainly to rise up the ranks. But does that really matter? Is that where your attention ought to be? The belief that the company is only succeeding if it's growing. What if the company were to succeed by deciding to be smaller and more niche? A belief that we must become more efficient, and we must always be looking for ways to become more efficient, and that's how you run a successful business. A belief that people need someone to make a decision for them, and that that person is their boss. The belief that people need someone else to sort out personal conflicts, that they can't do it on their own. The belief that you're either a profit centre or a cost centre. By the way, I find this belief potentially really damaging in businesses. And then there are some personal beliefs. The belief that other people are more confident than you, that other people know what they're doing better than you do. The belief that some people are just naturally good at certain things. The belief that it's harder for me to do X, Y, Z for these reasons. Or the belief that I'm the only one who gets it. Everything's so clear to me. Other people must be very stupid if they don't get what I see so clearly. I know that's a really long list, and there are tons of others. Can you think of any other really pervasive business beliefs, business assumptions, or personal assumptions that you've never even asked whether they're a fact or whether they're a fiction? For me, there's been a very pervasive belief that has affected my career up until the last 2 or 3 years, which is that people don't like change. There's a whole theory around resistance to change and a strong belief that ultimately people don't like change. And therefore, if you want people to change, they will inevitably experience resistance, and you need to design a program to help them to overcome their natural innate resistance to change. But if you read people like Otto Sharma, and I have the book in front of me that changed my mind about this, Leading from the Emerging Future, from Ecosystem to Ecosystem Economies, I highly recommend it. If you read any of his work, if you read Frederick Laloux, if you read Brian Robertson, who was the guy who developed the concept of holacracy, you'll understand actually that people are very good at change. People change all the time. They sell their house and move somewhere else. They become parents. They start a new job. They get an allotment. They take up a hobby. They redecorate their homes. They change their hair. They change their clothes. People are actually really good at change. We're sort of built for it. We're built for adapting to our environment and adapting our environment to work for us. So actually, this very ingrained belief that people don't like change is just that, a belief. It's not a fact. And so if you stop believing that people find change difficult and you start believing, actually, people are good at change, then you design a change program very differently. And if people aren't changing, if they are demonstrating resistance to change, then you no longer have the excuse of being able to say, well, people don't like change. What we're seeing here is inevitable. People are resistant to change, and we just need to push them through this program so eventually they come around. If you can't do that anymore because you fundamentally believe, actually, people are good at change, then you have to look for the real reason why they don't want to do this change. It isn't change per se that they don't like, it's this change. And that points you in a really different direction for how you're going to overcome the challenges that this change represents for people. Einstein said, "No problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it." The whole time that you're operating within a set of assumptions, you cannot resolve the problem that was created by having that set of assumptions. So what we're going to focus on this week is how to identify what your assumptions, what your beliefs are. Now, something I haven't talked very much about in the podcast so far is the idea of a leadership gang. I don't think that leadership is a one-man band. I think it requires a group of people to bring about change, to lead an organization. And that group can be huge. And one of the things that I recommend for my clients is that they work in gangs to help each other with their leadership development. So what I recommend is that you find 2, 3, 4, up to 7 other colleagues or leaders or individuals that you admire to form a gang with you. And these guys and gals will be your thinking partners. Their job is to challenge you, to coach you, to support you, to help you in practical ways. And of course, you'll do the same back with them. The first way that you can start to identify your beliefs and assumptions is to get your gang to help you. And here are a few questions that you can put to them and put to each other. Ask them, firstly, what comments and language you habitually use. Very often, we repeat the same things over and over again, and we don't even notice, but other people notice that we have this kind of, these mantras that we repeat consistently. Have they noticed any of those? Ask them what you seem to take for granted without question. Sometimes it's much easier for other people to see what we take for granted than it is for ourselves. Thirdly, when they express an opinion that jars with you, or that seems irrational to you, that basically seems kind of stupid, instead of putting the blame on them and asking yourself why on earth they don't see things as clearly as you do, use the opportunity to explore the beliefs that they have behind their opinion. So rather than taking the opposing view or arguing about opinion, get curious about how they think and what their beliefs are and how that leads them to have a particular perspective. Feedback from other people can be really helpful, and even if you strongly disagree with the feedback that you get, it at least allows you another perspective. Let's say you don't have a gang, or you don't have a gang yet. It is also possible to look inside yourself for clues about your beliefs. And this is a technique that I find really useful. So often people will say that they believe something, but their actions are in conflict with their stated beliefs. So for instance, I frequently hear people say they trust the people in their team. And yet, even though they say they trust the people in their team, they still retain the right to overrule a decision made by team members. They check their team members' slide presentations before they're used. So all of that is potentially evidence of distrust at some level. So to test your own beliefs, list what you say you believe about a given topic. So if you like, list what you say about your people. To test whether you truly believe that, ask yourself, if I really thought that that was true, what would I do? So let's say you say to yourself, I trust my people. Now ask yourself, if I really trusted people, what would I do? And take that belief to its ultimate conclusion. If you really trusted people, what would you be willing to do? What would you be willing to let go of, to start doing, to stop doing? How far would you go if you really, really believed your people could be trusted completely, 100%, always? Now, ask yourself if that is what you do. It can be really uncomfortable to uncover beliefs, especially if you've been saying that you believe something else for quite a long time. But be reassured that the true belief was always there, guiding your decisions, your actions, your opinions. Exposing it hasn't actually changed anything except that your self-awareness has expanded. Self-awareness is an amazing thing. Once you realise that you believe something and that belief is distasteful to you, you can easily just replace it. Or you can wait until an alternative belief that feels credible to you comes to you, but it may not happen immediately. So stay curious, listen to the beliefs and opinions of others, look for evidence that something else might be true, as opposed to the belief that you've been carrying around all these years, and see what comes to the surface. Most importantly, keep your beliefs under review. And if you like, you can tweet about this. I'm at Blair Palmer on Twitter. You can contact me via Instagram, Blair Lees Palmer, that's L-Y-S in the middle, or you can send me an email, blair@thatpeoplething.com. Please remember to rate this podcast and please, please, please share it. Next week, I am talking about purpose, whether it's important for you as a leader to be driven by a sense of purpose. And I'm going to be busting a few myths about that. Thank you very much for listening this week. I hope you'll join me again next week. But in the meantime, I'm going to finish by handing over to 8-year-old Ivy Palmer, who has a few more great quotes about assumptions from Albert Einstein.
The important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. Reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. Concepts that have proven useful in ordering things easily achieve such authority over us that we forget their earthly origins and accept them as unalterable givens. Unalterable givens.
Try again.
Unalterable givens. Unalterable givens.